chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Pratik Patel on the show today. Pratik is a director of sourcing and supplier management at MasterCard. Well, welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Pratik Patel. I have been looking so forward to this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for making the time to join me.
Yeah, Lisa, I really appreciate you allowing me to be on here. But I have to also say, I applaud you for this Something Extra podcast that you have. I know you're inspired by your daughter, but it is something, and I love the title, because you're making people think about what else is there out there that people should maybe know about, that maybe they're thinking about, but they're not saying, and inspiring others around. And I think that is wonderful that you're creating the forum to be able to allow people to kind of share that. And hopefully it inspires others as well. In whatever that something extra might be.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that so much, Pratik. Honestly, that just brings joy to my heart to hear you say that. So thank you. And I know that you are going to inspire our listeners and they're going to learn a lot from you today. So you and I met a few years ago when you joined the MasterCard team, because obviously, Technology Partners has been a partner of MasterCard for, I think, 27 or 28 of our 30 years. And so we met then. You've made some incredible transformational improvements since joining MasterCard, and we're going to dig into those a little bit later. You've won numerous awards. I know, Pratik, you're a very humble man, so you would not want me to say these things about you, but I'm going to say them anyway because I want our listeners to understand who we're talking to. But you've won numerous awards, including the MasterCard CFO Award for Labor Transformation, a 3-time SIA, for our listeners who may not know, that's Staffing Industry Analyst, the Game Changer Award, the SIA Diversity Influencer Award, and the list goes on and on and on. Clearly, Pratik, you have some mastery. You have some mastery in this area, but I also know enough about you to know that you would say you've not reached the summit.
That's right. None of us ever do.
None of us ever do. You're a lifelong learner, and I also know that you're all about continuous improvement.
Yes.
So you have some really strong values. And we're going to talk about those, Pratik. I've got a whole list of things here that people have said about you. And again, not to make you blush, but you're a servant leader, you're responsible, loyal, you create win-wins, which helps build long-term relationships, you're dynamic, you drive others around you to be the best in class, you're a standout talent, you've got a positive attitude. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But I know that this, but that's what people, I didn't make those things up. That's what other people have said about you. But I know those values come from a very, very special place.
Absolutely.
And I would love for you to tell our listeners about growing up. I'd also love for you to tell them about your grandfather. And I love the story about him being in fourth grade. So I'm not going to steal your thunder, but I want you to tell that story, Pratik, because it is so precious and makes so much sense of the man that you are today is because of some of those things. So tell our listeners that story.
Yeah, first off, Lisa, I'm an emotional guy, right? So I almost have a tear going down my eye when you're talking about me in that manner. And I really appreciate all the recognition and accolades. But really, we're all the sum of our life experiences. And I am super, super fortunate to have the experiences that I've had in my life. And it starts with my family. My family is everything for me. It's what instills the values that I have today. It drives me to be the best that I can be. And as you shared, it starts with my grandfather. So my grandfather grew up in India, and this was maybe early 1900s. And it's in his biography. So there's a biography written about my grandfather as well, where if you want, after we're done, I can share a link, because they've actually made it now so it's all electronic. So if anybody ever wants to see it, they can, and hopefully be inspired by it like how I'm inspired by it. So when he was born, he knew at an early age that he wanted to do more for the farmers in India. He didn't know what he wanted to do, but he wanted to do something for the farmers in India. And then as he started to have his education and this goal became stronger and stronger, and that desire became more and more in his heart, he recognized that he was going to face a challenge. And the challenge was education, because he was in a small village. And in a small village, they only went to fifth grade for their education. And he was in fourth grade, and thank the Lord that there was a Maharaj, which is the king of the area, that really wanted to listen to the people in the area too. And so he came to this little village that he was in a town hall, and he went there as a fourth grader, first of all, to have the maturity to even want to go there, because you can imagine everyone that's telling him, no, you can't be here. This is for adults. You can't have, because they don't know what a kid is going to do in that type of a study. Right. But they let him there. And you know, the Maharaj was asking people, like, is there anything I can do for you? You know, what can we do better for you from the state perspective? And so he raised his hand and he said, hey, I would love to be able to have an education beyond fifth grade. And in my village, I can't have that. The Maharaj was just completely taken back by that, because he recognized exactly the challenge that villagers face, right? And I think he saw that as an opportunity, that here's a guy that is so passionate and wants to make better of himself. I need to do what I can to help them. Now, I found out later, there were four other people that he also helped, this Maharaj did. It was in his heart to do it this way. But my grandfather is the only one that repaid him after all his education too, like instead of in terms of working for him in his kingdom. So others went on to do whatever they were wanted to do, right, with their education. But the Maharaj said that, hey, it's going to take us a while to build this, build the school. So until a school is built, we'll have you transported to a local school nearby, so you can continue your education beyond fifth grade. And any education you want, for as long as you want to have growing your education, the state will provide for you. And so he took advantage, got a couple of bachelor's, a master's out of Germany, got his PhD from the University of Illinois during the Great Depression as well. And he had lots of opportunities in the US after that too. But he remembered his mission and the reason for why he lives his life. And that was to help the farmers in India. But at the same time, he also was instilled values. And part of those values is, when somebody does something for you, you need to return the favor. And he was so appreciative to the Maharaj. He said, I will collect taxes for you as long as you'd want me to. And so he collected taxes in the kingdom, until India got its independence. But then, and the Maharaj was super appreciative of this too. Here's a guy that got his PhD, had all his education, all these other people he helped, he didn't do this, but here's a guy that wanted to repay in a sense. So he did that only for a couple of years, but then I think he started to allow him to be able to enable him to go towards his goal, which was to help the farmers. So ultimately he became the deputy agricultural director in India. When India got its independence, the Maharaj actually gave him his old palace, because one of the stipulations with the getting independence was all those little kingdoms that existed, they could continue to keep their land and whatever riches they had, but everybody got their independence. So you had to make some compromise, especially with no war.
Right.
So that's what happened. And then my grandfather was able to have this, it was a small place. It wasn't anything large, right? But it was the place that he could start growing a family. He ended up having 9 kids. My mom is the youngest of 9. I truly believe, and I know a lot of people had kids, a lot of kids and big families in India back then, but I truly believe that if he didn't raise his hand, I don't think I'm born. I mean, she's the youngest of 9. He was 55 when she had her. It was in his 50s. But I am so thankful for everything that he's done, because here's what he did. His true impact and why they wrote a biography on him is what he did after he was forced to retire, because you're forced to retire at a very young age in India too. So when he retired at like 55, because that's when you were forced to retire, because he had a government job as a deputy agricultural director, and he did some things, but he didn't achieve what he wanted to for the farmers. So then he started his research. He started his true ambition, and he didn't take one penny from anybody for his research. He had 9 other kids, right? So he had his kids kind of supporting, because they all got educations. The oldest got was a doctor. Others were engineers, business people. You know, they all were successful in their own ways. So they all kind of helped to fund his research in India, so his research was around wheat, because with his PhD and the level of education that he had, he recognized the sun and how the sun's rays come down on like plants or seeds has an impact in how they impact their germination process as well. And so it's a 7-year process to be able to really analyze the wheat and determine whether the cross-pollination and the seeding that you do will actually work. Well, he ended up developing a wheat that was 20% better than any wheat at that time, a wheat that took less water, had less infestation as well. The government was kind of jealous, because they're like, how can this guy, a farmer in a small village, be doing better than these state scientists? So he was kind of suppressed a little bit in his accomplishment. He didn't care. He cared about the farmers. So he made sure that there was a subsidization that was built. He didn't want a patent either. He didn't want any notoriety from this. He didn't want any money from this.
Incredible.
Either. He wanted to make sure there was a subsidization by the government so that they could afford that wheat at the same rate that any other wheat could be. And so that is truly inspirational for me, because it created, I think the number out there is something north of 500 million rupees with of economic wealth. It might have been dollars. My uncle will correct me at some point if I'm wrong. but he did make a huge impact. There was a guy in Mexico that won the Nobel Peace Prize for doing something similar many years later. The Ford Institute wanted to talk to him when he was in India. They saw him. They saw what he was doing. But he's like, I'm not achieving what I need to. So even when he achieved his initial results, it didn't achieve to what he wants. So he continued to push and push. At 88, he had a second heart attack. And he was still doing his research. He had someone underneath him as well, but he was still doing his research. And so the old age adage is true, which is not until you die do people really recognize the impact that you had. And I think people recognize that afterwards. And I'm so thankful for one of my uncles who has gotten all of the materials and the research. And then he shared this with a few people in that industry, and they were like, amazed. And they were surprised by everything that he did and very happy with it, that they decided to make a biography. And then he, but it was in like our native language. And so he wanted to make sure that all of us in the next generation, especially in the family, knew about my grandfather. And so then he found a person who volunteered to take that a biography and translate it into English so that all of us have the ability to understand what my grandfather did. I know that was a long-winded story, but
But I love that story. I found myself getting teary-eyed several of those. I'm kind of an old, like an old rusty leaky bucket too. So between the two of us. But there is so much I love about that story. I mean, the thing that I was just thinking about to put about, I'm like, this is a life well lived. I also think about the resilience that your grandfather had. He had that vision. He had, even in fourth grade, that what he wanted to do, and he saw it through. I think about you, and I think about how many times, Pratik, whatever it is that we're able to accomplish in this life, we are standing on the shoulders of someone else that's come before. And I can only imagine just the legacy of your grandfather and how that's impacted all of his descendants after him. You know, it's just such a beautiful, beautiful story. Well, let's go on and talk just a little bit, because I want to get into like some of the things that you've done in your career. Because, like I said, you've got mastery in this area, and so I want you to be able to share some of these learnings with our listeners. But you went on and got your education in industrial engineering from the University of Cincinnati, and then you got an MBA from Cleveland State, which is in Ohio. Did you grow up in Ohio, Pratik? I didn't ask you that before.
Yeah, so coming here, my dad had an education from India. He had an engineering degree from India. It was hard to establish yourself in the 80s with a foreign degree. So we had to move around a lot. I went to 11 different schools before I graduated from high school. So you can imagine what that does to you as well in terms of your growth, maturity, and just how you think about different things that you, because I mean, anybody new in any school is going to face some hardship and challenges, especially when you're also new and you're like one of the only ones that's of a different color as well in that school. So I faced discrimination. I faced bullying, right, when I was growing up as well. It's just part of it. But at the same time, I wanted to persevere, where I could. I mean, I didn't have many friends in high school because they or before I went to college, because I think people didn't necessarily want to be associated with me because people were going to be bullying me from that perspective too, right? And so then you kind of learn and to think about what do you need to do? What do you need to do so that you can be better? You can be better than that as well. So I think I became more bold. I think I became more of like mission driven because of my experiences of what I faced growing up. And through those experiences, that's enabled me and also change. I constantly face change because we went in so many different places. My parents heard this. I'm sure their heart would be broken too, because they know how much hardship it caused when you move from school to school. But I always told them it's totally fine, and I was absolutely fine with every single move because it was the right thing for the family, and ultimately, family comes first before anything else.
Yeah, they didn't have a choice. I mean, they really didn't, your dad didn't have a choice, right? To take care of you guys. He had to do what he had to do. So, Pratik, hearing you talk about all of that, it just makes me think, number one, you became very adaptable. Which is a great leadership trait, right? It's a great a trait to have throughout life, and agile. You probably also had a lot of time to reflect on who you are. you know, that it's not about what other people say about you, but your identity. So they're as hard as those things are in life. Sometimes those are the things I think that really strengthen who we are in our characters.
Let me answer the question, though, because you asked me about Ohio. So I was just trying to get to that from that piece. But Ohio was one of the last places that we moved to, you know, before I went to college. So we were 10th grade through 12th grade. I was in Ohio, but I was in two different schools in high school as well in Ohio. but I was born in Ballytona. So my grandfather wanted us all, the firstborn of every kid, to be born in the house. So a nurse was kind of brought in, and he just had this thing from a tradition perspective. So there's like this one room where eight of my other cousins as well were all born. Firstborn were born in that house.
Wow.
You know, so if you were in India before, right? If you were already in India, like some people had moved to the U.S., but if you were born in that India, they wanted to be born in the house. So I was born there. I came here when I was 7, and then we moved around: Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Nebraska, Ohio.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Now Missouri. Now
right.
Missouri. Well, let's talk about this. So you started as a process engineer at AK Steel, and you consulted through Anderson, which obviously eventually became Accenture, right? Went to Energizer. Talk about this pivot story. You were at Energizer for 13 years, Pratik, but there was a pivot story that really catapulted you into procurement. Can you tell that story? And then I've got lots of questions for you about procurement.
Well, you know, I think that, like I said, we're the sum of our life experiences. And the co-ops that I had in college really enabled me to build relationships with people that I had engaged with in those different companies. And it allowed me to be a little bit more bolder, a little bit more ambitious, a little bit more aspirational as well. And so the pivot story you're talking about is after I had left Anderson Consulting, I went back to Energizer as an engineer in the plant. And I met with our GM at the time, and I had skied with him when I was a co-op too. So, I mean, we had a little bit of a relationship. But if I didn't, I don't know if I would have been so bold. But I told him that when I first came back there that, hey, I want you to know that I have a lot of respect for what you do, but I also will have ambitions in my career. And I expect in 10 years to be where you're at. And I know that is an accelerated learning curve. I need to reflect consistently on my growth. What can I improve upon? What do I need to continually work on so that I am viewed as a potential to be able to replace you in 10 years? That's the mentality I want to have in my career. And I hope you can appreciate that. And it's not about a level of arrogance or ego. It's about instill in me about what I need to do to continuously grow and accelerate so that I can achieve that. Because if I am not achieving towards that path, then I've disappointed myself. And I have to reflect on what can I do for myself. And that's the mentality I try to have throughout my career. And he was so impressed with that they were struggling with finding procurement talent for finished goods battery manufacturing. They were looking for a long time. And he told the COO of the company that, hey, I think we should consider this engineer in the plant. That's not exactly a path that they normally take either. They usually want you to go to another plant and be an engineer before you would go to an R&D headquarters. And so this was at their R&D headquarters in Cleveland. I went and I interviewed because they said, hey, are you interested in procurement to go and interview for this role? I said, I'm in Bennington, Vermont. That's 15,000 people. Cleveland is like a couple million people. Yeah, I'm interested.
That's funny.
And it's closer to my parents too. Mm-hmm. So then I got involved in it and I had some amazing mentors in procurement as well. And I just have not had any desire to leave procurement in 20 plus years since then.
Yeah, you've just done some really, really amazing things. Let me talk to you a little bit, because when you left there, and we'll talk about what you're doing today, but you were the global procurement category manager for business services. But when you came into that role, Pratik, I'm just going to ask you a few questions here that might help our listeners if they're in thinking about this, or if
Yeah.
they're in that role already, to kind of help them as they think through. So tell me about building high performance teams within procurement. How have you traditionally done that?
Yeah, so I think building high performance teams is all about attributes. Attributes of what they bring that aligns with the desires of what the business needs. Because ultimately, we're an internal customer. I mean, like they're our customers. So
Yes.
everybody we interact with is our customers. And we want to ensure that we have people that have the characteristics that can be able to relate to those customers. Because if you can't drive influence, it doesn't matter if you have the process. It doesn't matter if you have the technology. You need to be able to drive the influence. And it starts with people. So, ironically, here at MasterCard, I have not hired anybody on my team that has had any experience in procurement.
Is that right? Oh my goodness. You were looking for these other attributes of being able to build relationships and
Yes, data,
teachable and
yeah,
those
and
kind of things.
data analytics, and also like what they bring because of their qualities and skill sets that can then translate to procurement, because as long as they're coachable and they're willing to learn, they can become the best. They can reach their potential in being a procurement professional if that's what they desire. And I always tell my team, you pursue your passions, whatever those passions are. It doesn't have to be in procurement, but if you like the doing your job as a being a procurement professional, then absolutely. So I think that it's not a cookie cutter answer in terms of, oh, what type of relationships do they have in engaging with suppliers, or how did they understand negotiations and negotiation skills? Because you would think about that from procurement perspective, but those are things that can be learned.
Learned. Yes, agreed. Agreed. I love that. Well, it reminds me so much, Pratik, as I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about the Southwest Way. And Herb Keller had said that way back, right? And he said, I'm going to hire for attitude, I'll train for skills. The
Yes.
attitude was the most important thing to him as he was building Southwest Airlines. So I just love that. Well, let me ask you just a couple more questions, and then we do need to take a really quick break. After Energizer, you went to Mallinckrodt. Now you've been at MasterCard since 2018. Let's talk about this, because I know, because you've been in it for a while, how have you seen this area evolve over the years? And I'd love for you already mentioned data analytics. How's data
Oh,
playing
yeah.
such a big role now, right? Can you talk about that a little bit, and then we'll take a quick break.
Absolutely. Because 20 years ago, it was more of a buy-sell transaction that was taking place. And the business had identified who they wanted to work with through whatever relationships they had built with these different suppliers, or whether it was the people that they had met, even if it was cold inquiries and things like that. You're in that space. You understand that as the kind of what you were dealing with maybe early on in the evolution of technology partners from that perspective. But I think what really changed the paradigm is when people started to recognize that it's not just about price. There's so many other attributes that we look at beyond just price from a risk perspective. Procurement has a responsibility to protect the equity of the company. And so how we protect the equity of the company starts with the contracts that we execute. The business doesn't necessarily get engaged in terms of what are those terms and conditions that govern our relationship. And so that's where there's an element where, and it's still maturing, to be honest. I think that many organizations, procurement is not taking like I always say, the first line of defense. They're not that first line of defense. They're just being that conduit with legal, when in really they need to take a level of ownership because they have a level of influence in understanding the intent of the contractual terms that are out there and why we have what we have and how we're trying to protect the risk that we cannot control. And so being able to share that message. So I think that's one aspect, is just around contracts and understanding the importance from how procurement has a responsibility to protect the equity of the company from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Then you get into understanding capabilities of suppliers. Because when you understand capabilities, now you're able to really capitalize on what that true ecosystem looks like for that supplier and how that can drive value. And that can enable us to maybe have less suppliers because the suppliers that you have already have some of those other capabilities. And that can then enable us to maybe look at how can we now further drive value from that supplier. Suppliers then can make investments into what we're trying to do.
Yes.
Suppliers can be able to also get synergies on their cost structure as well to drive the value. It's efficiencies for the supplier too, when they're working across multiple areas and supporting us. So all those things I think had an impact in terms of that evolution to where today we really want to get to where meet the unmet need. So it's the business doesn't even recognize that they have the need, but right. We can show them the value of what our suppliers bring to meet a need that they don't even know that's there. And so when you have built such strong relationships with the business and you have an understanding of what their goals and objectives are and what they're trying to achieve, and then you marry that with what your understanding is of our suppliers and what their capabilities are and how they manage risk for us, how they're aligned to our overall strategic objectives, that is a very powerful combination that procurement becomes the conduit to enable. And that's where we're going, I believe, today.
Yeah, that is so good. That is so good. I just had to nod my head when I read something that you had written. Pratik, you go, "In God we trust, everything else is about the data."
Yes.
I just had to, I'm like, yes, it is. Well, listen, this has been, I've got so much more I want to dig into, okay? But we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Pratik Patel.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Pratik Patel. So, Pratik, this has been so much fun. We've had so much to talk about, but I can't not talk about this because it's on everybody's lips right now, and AI. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about this. You just completed a course. I think you just got a degree or a certificate from Wharton, which I applaud you for that, continuous learner in you that you haven't reached the summit. But how are you seeing AI affecting our industry right now?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, AI is not new. It's been around for 50 plus years. MasterCard has been implementing all types of use cases, the technology around AI for 20 plus years. Every time you have a transaction and you think about that being approved, well, there's a lot of AI algorithms that are kind of taking place behind the scenes to prevent fraud. So it's not new, but what I love about what's happening right now is the amount of passion and energy and, most important, investment into really helping to accelerate the potential of what AI brings. Because if we can take a step back and kind of think about AI from like how does it kind of evolve, right? So first, it starts with data. And so the data is about garbage in, garbage out. It's about, mm-hmm. Do you have good data? Do you have data that you can now look at relationships of that data? And when you look at the relationships of that data, what type of trends and patterns does that help us to get from what those relationships show? So you can have structured data or you can have unstructured data. If you have structured data, then you're basically looking at data that you're feeding it exactly. And then you're putting business rules to it so that it can then glean insights from that structured data. If it's unstructured, which is what ChatGPT is, then now you're taking everything that's out there and looking at what everything is out there and how can you glean insights from what your inputs are. Now, Gen AI, which is, I love the marketing analogy with that too. Whoever came up with that, genius. That was really good because it's catchy.
Yes.
So Gen AI, generative AI, that's talking about natural language processing. And so English language, now you're able to take words that we use daily and be able to input a statement. And based on that statement you're inputting, it's predicting based on how you're sharing a question or a prompt as to what the output is that you're looking for. That is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I think that has limitations. The limitations it has is it's only as good as the data that's available out there, which is a bias that is out there too. Because if there are biases in that data, that's going to come through. This course that I took, it wasn't around like Python programming or around really the technical execution of AI. It was really about one, understanding what AI is, how does it work, how does machine learning work, and then also use cases and how it's applied in different parts of our businesses. And then more importantly, the ethics, thinking about the ethics and governance of it. Because if you're going to use these new technologies, you really should think about what are the ramifications of using those technologies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated this course because it helped me really understand how there can be false positives, false negatives. How do you minimize false positives and false negatives in the output of what your prompts are? So there is so much potential. But can I share about how maybe we're leveraging it within our group?
Oh, please do. Yes, I would love to hear about how MasterCard's leveraging it.
But more importantly, how I'm leveraging it as it relates to category management in my role. So that's how I'd want to talk about it from that aspect.
Absolutely.
Because I think that can hopefully inspire others, especially in procurement roles, in terms of thinking about AI as well. So first and foremost, it's the data. And you got to have good data. And how do you get to good data? Well, first you have to standardize your data. You have to know what is important that you need to be able to capture in your category from a data perspective. What are those different attributes? Where are you going to get that data from? And is it going to be consistent as you get new data coming in? Mm-hmm. And so about three and a half years ago, we implemented a centralized VMS, a vendor managed system for statement of work, time and material engagements. And so this enabled us to have a centralized place for that data, but that wasn't enough. I mean, we basically told our VMS that I appreciate how you've implemented this in the past, but we're focused on waste elimination. I talk about waste all the time because I'm laser focused on it. And I've even shared like on my badge, I have the 8 areas of waste that exist in any process that I wear, not because I want to go back and reference, it's a muscle memory. But if I ever do need to reference it, it's there. Or if I want to give it to somebody else, I can say, hey, let me tell you, what does waiting mean? And where does waste exist from a waiting perspective?
Yeah.
So I'm so glad
you brought that up because I knew that about you. And I was going to say, so we'll, if we have time, I want to dig into that one a little bit further.
Yeah. So then it's about leveraging lean principles in how we kind of structure what is the data that we need. How do we need to use this new process of centralizing our data? And it's not just that, but we also streamlined other processes with having this centralized system. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in terms of some of the value that the company overall got from the streamlining of the processes. But when you look at it just from a data perspective, it's about minimizing data variability as well once you have the data in a centralized system. And now, 3 years later, we're there. I knew we were going to get there. I had a vision to be able to ultimately utilize this data in a way that can be a self-service tool back for the business. But I knew that it was not going to happen right overnight either. It's going to take us time.
Yeah.
But we're there now, and it's super exciting because what we're able to do is we have less variability in our data. To give you an idea, 70% of our spend that goes through that tool is in 10 job role, job level combinations. I challenge you on any other company in the industry that's able to do that for as large of a scope of program that we have, which is in the thousands, right, of the number of resources. Because I worked with our business in terms of defining job descriptions that really, and job levels that aligned with competencies of what we need, and that would continuously be reviewed by everybody in the business and see that, oh, that's what I need to put. Forget what I was going to put. I'm going to use this job description, because then suppliers also understand what does that mean in terms of our rate cards that we established too. So we have consistency. What we're doing now is we're building a chatbot in a Microsoft application called Copilot, right? That really enables us to be able to take all the different data streams that we've built. And not just the centralized data that exists for our transactions, but how we evaluate our suppliers. We have capability matrix that we utilize and how we assess our suppliers as well. Our rate cards, we have tens of thousands of, or 10,000 plus lines of data when it comes to our rate cards from our suppliers too. So all of these things enable us to be able to have a level of predictability when we marry the data with prompts. And so we want to create a chatbot for the business, right supplier, right need. And so we're in the process right now. We're querying the business around some of our use cases to ensure that we have to make trade-offs in how we kind of build this chatbot, that we have the ability to make those trade-offs so that we get to what's most important for them. But this enables them, instead of querying with us all the time, because I have people contacting me all the time about how we can support them across the company,
right,
is to be able to use this to get to the supplier that they need for the job roles, job levels, for the locations that they're looking at. They can also get references of other people in the company that are using them, like those types of things. So that's where we're ending up.
That's so innovative. I'm there may be another company out there doing that, Pratik, but I'm not sure to that level of sophistication. Right supplier, right need. It's almost like a self-service type model for the business, right? So wow, that's
And I built a team that's very passionate about each one of these areas. So we have like a data analyst, a content creator, a product management technical, a TPM that kind of manages the different aspects of this. That's all volunteers as part of our volunteer program to pursue, to allow people to pursue their passions. And so this doesn't cost the company anything other than our license with Microsoft to be able to enable this. So that's the other powerful component of this.
So important. Well, I'm sure. So you just set me up because I am sure this is why you won the CFO, MasterCard CFO Labor Transformation Award, Pratik. This is probably a big part of that, you know, I'm assuming. And I kind of thought I wanted you to talk about that a little bit. And then I was thinking maybe you could talk a little bit about the three pillars that you built into that program, the transparency and the, you know, can you just touch on that for a minute, and then I want to move into some diversity and inclusion, which I know is near and dear to MasterCard's heart and yours and mine as well. So talk about that CFO award.
So the CFO award was really about better, faster, cheaper, right? So the better piece is how can we make our process more streamlined so that maybe risk, legal does not need to be a part of that process because we've already accounted for what their concerns are when we look at time and material engagements, right? As a result of that, we've taken a lot of work away from legal or risk that they would have had to look at before because they were naturally getting it as part of our previous process. So we have these addendums that we create with our suppliers that captures all of our terms and conditions. And so in theory, we are able to onboard a resource in hours with a statement of work because we have established rate cards in place. And so we've taken a process which was taking sometimes maybe 30 plus days when I first came here, where maybe companies are taking a week or two to do it. We can do it in hours. The only constraint is the background check that the supplier has to have done for those resources that we can't control. And so we've streamlined the process, which enables us to be able to execute the labor needs in as little as hours.
Faster.
And so that is super powerful, as you could imagine, across the company.
Yes, yes, it is. And that's so important, right? Because we both know technologists, though, that talent doesn't last for very long. Right.
That's right.
So if you wait too long. I mean, we have to consult with clients all the time. If you wait too long, that person is not going to be available because, so that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing all that. Well, I know that, I've got just a couple more questions for you and then we're going to talk about something extra. I know diversity and inclusion, very, very important to MasterCard, but you know, how can you talk about some of the initiatives that you've had in that space? I know veterans are really important for you guys. I mean, just how, whatever you want to talk about, Pratik. And then I do have one other question that we're going to talk about something extra.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, with what my grandfather did and how that inspires me, the platform that I have with my role in supporting diversity is so, so important to me. And so it's about creating opportunities where opportunities would not exist. I always say diversity breeds diversity as well. So if you're going to work with diverse suppliers, then they're going to be intentional about also leveraging diverse suppliers, talent, people in their ecosystem as well. Diversity Yeah. breeds diversity. So there's a couple of things that we've done at MasterCard that I'm really proud of, right? Number one is when you look at our staffing program, the barrier to entry when it comes to staffing is relatively low. Because it's all about finding the talent and the talent stream to be able to get that talent from. That's why we have 30,000 staffing suppliers in the United States alone, right? So we take staffing now to the next level when we look at it from a diversity perspective. It's not just about 51% ownership in diverse classes or trying to ensure you have diversity in every class that's out there, but it's being purposeful. So we need to work, we want to work with staffing suppliers that are mission born, which means they have a mission for why they exist, and it's to make an impact in the community. And they're using staffing as a revenue enabler to feed that mission. Most mission born companies do not have a very large sales or marketing group either, because they're using the profits that they would have from funding that towards that mission as well. They rely on their managed service provider or the word of mouth from others as well, you know, to be able to drive towards that business. And I am a huge believer in it. We've already started with a couple of companies like that. We have a pipeline for the next couple of years of mission-born companies that we want to create the space in our program for, because I believe that we need to create a force multiplier effect out there. Business can be a force for good. And diversity Absolutely. Is not just about 51% ownership. Diversity is about being impactful back into the community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Pratik, and then I want to talk about something extra because I know you've got some really great wisdom around that question. But what advice would you have? So like, say you've got someone that's younger in their pursuit of the procurement supplier sourcing space. What advice would you give them, Pratik?
Yeah, so I'm always a person of threes. If I don't have three perspectives, then I don't have enough to be able to really justify it. So I always am going to give you threes. So number one, I think, is focus on how you can drive influence. That's not just around procurement. That's around anything in life. And influence is not the same thing as manipulation. So I hope people don't understand that they
Right.
use the same thing, because then it's not
Completely.
going to work for you. It's
Yeah.
not going to work. Influence is about building relationships, building trust, credibility. So whatever it is that your passion is, and if it's in procurement, then understand your suppliers, right? Understand who you're working with, understand what the business's needs are, and then be able to take those data points that you get from both parties to be able to then take to other people that you want to be able to go and influence. Like, hey, let me tell you about how this other business is using this supplier. And also, let me tell you what this supplier is doing out in the marketplace, or how they're driving innovation in the payment space. Have a story to tell. So one is influence. Two, be a storyteller. I hope you see we're telling lots of stories in this conversation.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
So learn to tell stories, because that's what's impactful. A story, you have to start with really why, the what, the so what, and the now what, right? I mean, that's the components that have to be there. So be a good storyteller. And number three, process discipline. Like,
That's a good one.
learn, like, know where the waste is. If you don't know where the waste is, go seek out, understand the process. It will then help you identify exactly where the waste exists. And if you know where the waste is, now look at how can you be able to eliminate the waste. And once you eliminate the waste, then you have to look at building the process so you don't have that waste occurring again. If you can do that, whether it's in procurement or anywhere in life, you will go far, because you will be able to drive a better, faster, cheaper execution in anything you're doing.
That's so profound, Pratik, because I'm just thinking about that and I'm thinking about, where do we waste time, right? It's not just where do we waste money, it's where do we waste our time?
Yes.
How can we get time back? That's why I'm so excited about AI and the tools that are coming, because I do think it's going to help us hopefully streamline some things and give us back some time. But yeah, so if you're listener, if you want to know about the ways, just go talk to Pratik. He's got it on his badge. He's got those ideas. So Pratik, I have to ask you, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, and I hope it's came through in terms of this conversation too, but I think you need to show a sense of humility. And with that humility, there needs to be also an understanding that it's okay to be vulnerable. So humility and vulnerability are two areas that I think we need more of across our lives, not just in business. Because when you allow for the humility to come through, that humbleness, what you're doing is you're focusing on the facts, you're focusing on the story that's driving the impact. You're building credibility, you're building trust. You're enabling people also to have a forum to be able to share as well, because that's just going to help drive innovation. That's going to drive greater collaboration as well. And I always tell my team, I work for you. So, so you tell me, what can I do so
How
that I
can
can
I
make
serve
you
you?
look better? So I can make you look better.
Yes. That's good. That's gold. That is gold. Well, Pratik, honestly, this has just been so much fun. I am so delighted that you agreed to be on, that you made the time, you carved out the time, and I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you. There's so much gold. I've got a friend, Pete Hogan, he says it's boulders of gold, boulders of wisdom. You just dropped on us today. So thank you so much for
So
being
much, Lisa.
on the
I really appreciate it. I hope we inspired people from our conversation.
Yes, me too.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.